Diversity Music Group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color. NJ fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, ma, I made it, new, most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact, shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree.
Edition of the Green and White Show here with you on this Sunday, November 1st, 2015. I'm Amiri Tella, joined alongside Joseph Haas. Haas, my man, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? Look who's back. He's back, folks. The great Amiri Tella back joining us on the Green and White Show. Good to have you back, my man. As you said, I'm Joseph Haas. Yo, so much going on in sports right now. I mean, we'll try to hit a grand slam. Mets, they fall short last night. American Pharoah, though, man, for a horse. That's some horse. We'll talk about that. Jets, Oakland. Hey, we're pre-gaming it for the 9:30 game. I'm loving these games in London. I'm loving having football all day long. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Amiri, the NBA started. It's gone crazy. You know, we're going to have some ice time with Amiri as we check into hockey. So, whew, a full slate. Why am I still talking? Amiri, are you ready to talk some Jets football or what?
Indeed, Haas, and I think we can't go any further without, or at least discussing, the Jets' loss against the Rangers last week. A very difficult one to swallow, especially considering the way that thing ended. But entering it, I think everybody anticipated it to be a difficult game, and where the Jets are right now at 4-2, they've hit a good spot in their schedule where they can. It's foreseeable for them to rattle off a couple of victories here. The Raiders today. And then obviously the Jaguars the following week. So it's foreseeable that the Jets can maybe bounce back after that difficult loss against the Patriots, Haas. But what did you see specifically in that game, that 30-23 defeat from the New York Jets?
Man, I saw a team that had every opportunity to win the football game. And early it looked like, you know, Tom Brady was going to do his thing. He seemed comfortable under center. But then it looked like the Jets defense really woke up, Amiri. It really looked like, you know, they were going to be able to not just, you know, bottle Tom Brady, but really keep the rest of that offense under wraps. Their defense was really starting to, you know, pursue the run, the short passes. You know, Tom Brady's always going to get the intermediate pass off. You're always going to see him having a break game with Edelman. But you started to see slowly but surely it looked like, okay, this defense is taking control of the line of scrimmage. They're not letting any deep balls go by. Tom Brady's going to have to settle for the short ball, and he was getting hit. It looked like the Jets had everything they needed in order to come away with a victory, but then Tom Brady was Tom Brady, and the Patriots give the New York Jets their second loss of the season.
Yeah, and it was, you know, obviously the circumstances that that game wound up coming down to a lot of anecdotes to take from that game. Though I think, you know, the Jets being in the position that they were in, being able to spot the New England Patriots team, you know, this is one of those, you know, couple weeks left in the season and potentially trying to determine whether or not the Jets will be able to make it to the postseason. You know, this is one of those games, looking back on it, that could perhaps have had a monumental effect on what this team was doing. And this game, in the end, could perhaps adjust the way that the Jets are ranked entering the postseason. Now, I would agree with you in saying that, you know, this is a team in the Jets that definitely played well. I thought the game, from the Jets' standpoint, looked like the Jets were competitive for all 3.5 quarters. But that last push, that last surge by the Patriots was hard to combat, and certainly the Jets did not make it any better with some of the mistakes that they made, Haas. But I think in all encompassing of this game, I don't think the Jets all that bad. And considering again that this is a 6-0 team, now a 5-0 team when the two teams played, you know, that's a good effort to show. So you would have loved to get that victory, and I think that was definitely the expectation when the Jets were up at certain points in this game. But you know, it's one of those times where perhaps you just got outed by a much better team.
Yeah, you know, like you said, I mean, and we do got to give the New England Patriots a ton of credit. They're definitely atop the AFC East right now, and of course it's already looking like it's going to be a Denver New England AFC Championship. I know teams like the Bengals and their fan base, they believe they have something to say about it, but only the rest of the season will tell. Like I said, I'm not going to believe in the Bengals until I see them do it in the postseason. So right now it looks like a collision course between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning again, as Denver continues to roll and these Patriots, which like I said looked challenged by the Jets. And let me tell you what I take away from this game, Amiri. Green and White Show, Amiri Tulip there, Joseph Haas here, breaking it down, Jets, Patriots, and then we'll get into some Jets, Oakland. Just by looking at that game and the way the Jets played, I believe they can play with anybody in the league right now. I don't see them. I'm not pretty much going to go into any other game this season really doubting the way the Jets can put it together, especially, you know, with them battling injuries going into this game as well. Buster Screen limited in practice. Willie Colon, we're both worried about him and how that offense held up about him. Chris Ivory's body and his play against the Patriots. We'll see, you know, what's going on with him. And we both know that Calvin Pryor is out. So the Jets are going to go into this game with just two safeties on the roster. That's going to be a bit challenging for a team that likes to, you know, play with five defensive backs sometimes and really likes to be aggressive with their secondary up at the line of scrimmage. And Amiri, only having two safeties on the roster could be a challenge for head coach Todd Bowles.
Right, and you know, you think about a team like the Oakland Raiders, obviously I think, as you mentioned there, and as I mentioned earlier, this is one of those games where you enter with the expectation that you will walk away with a victory. But, you know, we've seen it a couple of times this year, especially that game against the Eagles, the other loss, where, you know, the Jets perhaps came into that game a struggling Eagles team and perhaps looked over the heads of the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I think that's one of the things that from what I've been hearing from the locker room and from what I've been grasping at from this Jets team thus far, Todd Bowles is not the type of guy to allow the Jets to enter a game with a jaded mindset, or at least perhaps a self-promotional mindset. I don't think that's the type of guy Todd Bowles is, and I fully expect after that Eagles loss, he was right in every single one of those players' faces and making sure that type of result does not happen again. But this is one of those games where you could enter it perhaps with a little overconfidence. And although the Jets did just come off of a loss, and while I certainly think that should motivate them to start off the game extremely well early, I definitely want to see how this Jets team responds to the fact that they're playing a 3-3 Oakland Raiders team that by no stretch of the imagination is formidable. But let's see how the Jets respond. Let's see what the Jets do from the opening gate, because obviously, as you mentioned, not having a couple of their key players, not being at 100%, coming off of a difficult, you know, emotional type loss against the New England Patriots, that's when your team really gets tested. And we saw it earlier in the year, and let's see if we can see it now. Can they bounce back from what was a very difficult week last week against a pretty winnable game, in my opinion.
Oh, completely agree. Now, them making the trip out west to Oakland, you know, everybody getting the extra hour as well. That should all be, you know, played in. They're playing a 4 o'clock game, so the Jets should be pretty much, you know, acclimated to the whole travel, and there shouldn't really be, you know, a body clock issue or anything like that. It should be some very good competitive football. It should be pretty much like a kickoff start here on, you know, on the East Coast. So they should be ready to go. The Jets are facing a team that's they're no pushover on offense or defense, Amiri, okay? Khalil Mack is one of the most explosive players on defense, and we both know he's going to be introducing himself to Ryan Fitzpatrick at least a couple of times in this game. So let's not forget that. But let's not also forget that Amari Cooper is looking really, really good in an Oakland Raiders uniform. So with only a couple of safeties, there's going to have to be some double teaming there. So you're definitely going to see two corners on Cooper's side of the ball. you know that you're going to see the safety up at the line of scrimmage with the Jets. He's going to be helping and supporting against a very, very, you know, effective run game by the Oakland Raiders. They look very potent on offense. You know, they started out the season okay, Amiri, and then, you know, took a turn like the Raiders, you know, kind of normally do. But it's not for lack of it's not for lack of athletic players. It's not for lack of guys that can go up and get the ball. If you look at Oakland Raiders film, they like to go over the top a lot, Amiri. This team goes deep. They like to hit the 20, the 30, the 40-yard pass. Is the Jets secondary going to be ready with these injuries to face off against a team that loves to push the football field through the air?
Right. This is going to be a huge test, especially for those corners like you mentioned. You know, we've been hearing a lot this season about the different ways that the Jets have benefited, obviously tangibly and intangibly, from, you know, getting their primary corners back. But as you mentioned, mm-hmm. these are the type of games where you can really get tested. I'm interested in seeing, you know, the response that we see. You know, let's see if we can get a performance out of Darrell Revis that would put him in that conversation, or at least put him in the situation where you can be confident that he can shut down any team's opposing wide receivers or any team's opposing, mm-hmm. you know, passing threat. Same with Antonio Cromartie on the other side of the field. You know, let's see, as you mentioned, although they are out without their safeties, I want to mm-hmm, see what mm-hmm. the corner response will be. I mean, when you're talking about a game like this against the Oakland Raiders, doesn't this type of game where you're playing against a primary threat on the offense, the Amari Cooper, you know, all the threat that the Oakland Raiders have to go deep, doesn't that, mm-hmm. as a cornerback, shouldn't that make you anticipate a game even more, the opportunity to go out and show yourself against a primary, you know, legitimate, hyped up threat in the National Football League?
Exactly. You know what? This is the kind of challenge. And you can't have made it to the NFL without wanting to accept challenges each and every day from someone trying to take your roster spot. Look, the New England Patriots, 7-0 right now, being challenged by not just the New York Jets, but you know, on our ankles and on our heels, our team like the Miami Dolphins that seem to be getting it together under Coach Campbell. There's challenges everywhere. And it makes me think of one of my favorite movies, an older movie called Troy, where Brad Pitt was in it. And all they talked about was how, you know, they couldn't wait for another challenge in order for their name to become greater. And defensive backs with great names like Darrell Revis and Antonio Cromartie, these wide receivers, these young guys like Cooper, they're going to come out and they're going to say, hey, look, you know, we win this matchup today, they will remember our names. And their names should get a little bit bigger. So you know, it should be incumbent on guys like, you know, with big names like Revis and Cromartie to want to, you know, step up to the challenge as well. They know that they're going to get the other wide receivers' best game each and every game. You know, you're going to look a whole lot better when you catch for 100 yards on Darrell Revis than you do on another, you know, a less, you know, another pedestrian cornerback. So right. They've got to know that they're going to have an opposing wide receiver's, you know, best ball game. So they've got to come out, and I expect nothing less from Revis.
Now let's look on the other side of the ball as well. I mean, let's see what the Jets' defensive line can do against a team like the Oakland Raiders, who have not really been a running threat. They have not really possessed much of a run game. So, yes, I fully expect the majority of their offense to come in the air. Let's see if they can get to the quarterback, Derek Carr, and let's see if they can get to the running game that the Oakland Raiders have, to this point in the year, really proven not to have. You know, this is something that the Jets are potent in. The Jets are very, very technical when it comes down to stopping the run, and very, very potent when it comes down to getting to the quarterback. And thus mm-hmm. far this year, we have gotten a chance to see that in a couple of games. Let's see if they can put on that show, the Jets D-line, against a team in the Oakland Raiders that clearly, as I mentioned, have not really put up much of a running threat thus far this year, but also against a team that has a quarterback like Derek Carr, where if you can get him under pressure, you can get him under duress, Haas, there's no
Make
doubt
move.
That he is not an elite quarterback at all.
Make him move. Exactly. Great point, Amiri. You make that guy move. Okay, make him feel uncomfortable back there. All right, but yes, he's got a strong arm. Yes, he's pretty accurate. I'm telling you, that guy loves the deep ball. But I say move him. I say he's more traditional than most know. I loved watching him when he played a little college football over in Fresno. He's got, he's a strong quarterback. But you make a move like the New York Jets have been doing each and every game. It's been great to see this defensive line. Now with the addition of Sheldon Richardson getting another week under his belt, it's just going to get stronger. They've got a great rotation up front. Leonard Williams, you know, not I wouldn't want to say defying the odds. Everybody will agree that he's pretty much the top talent in this year's NFL draft. And the Jets lucking out and getting him was just a godsend on that defensive line that's just a little bit stronger. You've got Mo Wilkerson. You've got Snacks. Guys that really attack the quarterback. A nice rotation where even, you know, Doosable gets in on the action. Amiri, that front line, that perfect swarm, playing great right now. You're seeing some short tackling from Harris. Hey, you're even seeing Calvin Pace making plays in the back. This is an unbelievable, you know, this is a defense that's ready for postseason football. Now, I've always said, will the Jets offense catch up? Will the Jets offense catch up? Well, you know what? I love the way the Jets offense is playing football right now. The mix of the run and pass for the Jets has been tremendous. Yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't have the arm of a Derek Carr or of most of these, you know, top quarterbacks in the league to get it down the field. But what he does is he gets the ball to Marshall with him and giving him a chance to make some plays. You're getting good matchups with Decker on the second best cornerback on the opposing team. The Jets offense runs the ball great with tough running from Chris Ivory, and out of the backfield, you're getting a lot of Bilal Powell catching the ball. The Jets offense just needs tight end help. That seems to be the only deficiency, in my opinion. I mean, do you agree with me or disagree with me on the Jets needing some tight end help?
Interesting. I think definitely that the Jets have entered this year, and if you talk about one of the weaker aspects of the team, it's definitely been the tight end position. Just taking a look at the depth chart, and you don't see a name that really possesses, you know, any sort of intimidation if you're in a
it
opposing
team, right? It doesn't
strike
fear into my heart. I mean, I don't mind, you know, my middle doesn't have – yeah, exactly. And what does that let you do? A team like Oakland will start sending the middle linebackers a little bit more because they've got nothing up the middle to worry about. A safety can handle a Jeff Cumberland, which means that there's going to be one more guy in the box to slow down Ivory on the run and one more blitzing linebacker coming at Ryan Fitzpatrick. We've already talked about Willie Colon and his bum leg. How long is he going to be able to hold up? That'll mean enter Brian Winters again, Amiri. So them not having strong tight end play is going to lead to, okay, you're going to see a wide receiver screen. You're going to see a couple in the flat to Powell. But what you're not going to see is you're not going to see the gaps that could easily be there if a linebacker had to cover a tight end off the line of scrimmage. Okay, you're not going to get the easy up the middle plays for Chris Ivory, and you're not going to get anything over the top from Cumberland. You know, it's starting to look like the Jason Morrow pick is more of a bust than anything else. The Jets knew they needed tight end help. They've got to go out and get tight end help. Are they? GM McCagnan's made a lot of great moves, okay, real early in his career here as Jets GM. Is he going to go out there and find one of these tight ends that are available? Is he going to pull the trigger on a trade? Will he be able to find that diamond in the rough? That's what the Jets need in order to go from a pretty good team on offense to a very dominant team on offense, Amiri.
Right, and you mentioned the ripple effect, the snowball effect that a good tight end brings or removes from the equation, right? I mean, you look at teams that have had so much success in the National Football League, the team the Jets just played. They're obviously the New England Patriots have made it their MO in recent years to have a dominant tight end, and that has clearly had tangible effects for the rest of the offense, for the rest of the team, for the rest of the organization. So I think in this day and age, the receiver position is vital, and we have seen that clearly because it is a throwing league. But in this day and age, you have also been able to see the development of a lot of these tight ends who are not just the one-dimensional blocking guys that stay right next to the tackle and protect the quarterback, but you need to have that dual threat. And while Jeff Cumberland may perhaps have the size, the measurables of a tight end, I'm not too sure that, as we've seen throughout his career with this Jets team, I'm not too sure that he's the best catching downfield threat or at least even a middleman that the Jets might need. They just need somebody to run 10 yards and be a presence, be an option for somebody like a Ryan Fitzpatrick. So in a league with the tight end where the tight end really has created its own little mold amongst NFL teams, and we've been able to see how those successful teams have utilized the tight end beneficially, I think the Jets are definitely in a position where they should try and go out and acquire a tight end. Maybe not this year. Maybe that's a down the line thing. But if there is not a better option on this team right now, which obviously that question definitely needs to be asked, then yes, I think that position could definitely be improved, and that certainly should be in the conversation as far as getting the Jets offense on a much higher level. No doubt about it.
Green and White Show, Amiri Tuluk there. Joseph Foss here. Follow Amiri Tuluk on Twitter at Amiri Tuluk. You can follow myself on Twitter at Jersey Haas, getting into a little Jets, Oakland, and then the rest of the AFC East as well, as we'll be joined by the Reverend Ralph Mancini at 8:30. Hey, Amiri, I'm really loving these London games. Figure we'll get a little bit of that in before I get ice time with Amiri going. I'm loving these London games, Amiri. 9:30 a.m. NFL football. I could get used to this. Okay, are they really getting us? Are they getting us? Are they warming us up to this possibly being, you know, an every, you know, other Sunday thing? I mean, if they do put a team in London, that team is going to be playing 8 home games, which means we're going to get 8 9:30 a.m. games. Amiri, are you feeling it? I'm feeling excited.
And we've seen the excitement in New England, like we've seen the UK. We've seen the excitement.
Oh yeah, trust me, they know what you're calling us, New England. Those guys across the pond there.
Yeah, we've definitely seen the excitement. I mean, with a game like this, even a game like Detroit versus Kansas City, where perhaps in the state, that's a game that's overlooked. A 1-6 Detroit team taking on a 2-5 Kansas City team. That's a game that's really overlooked. And, you know, although the NFL perhaps in the states is a big thing, I think a lot of people would probably overlook that game. But if you put that in a situation where football games are a treasured, you know, treat and people are not accustomed to seeing it, those menial games perhaps in the states can draw huge numbers, can draw huge attention, and can maybe open up the doors for a lot of people overseas. So definitely I think these are the type of games that the NFL should try and promote. Now naturally, I would love to see the excitement level rise through the roof when you get a solid competition game overseas.
Yeah,
you get a Seattle Green Bay, you get a New England, New York Jets game overseas, that's where the excitement will take a whole new level. But I think the NFL is doing good by instituting these games that may not be getting as much attention here in America, but overseas could perhaps draw a different number.
Right. And that's it. Because, you know, I was thinking, when are they going to send, you know, one of those prime matchups like you just mentioned? But then I say, hey, look, they're getting so much out of matchups that wouldn't be getting a lot of play here. You know, this week with the great slate of games, we would not be talking about Detroit versus Kansas City. I don't even think it would get a mention. There are a lot of matchups going on this Sunday that we're not even going to end up mentioning on the show, and that would be one of them. But now they're going to not just get a mention. I mean, we're leading into Detroit and KC in London, 9:30 a.m. You can catch that on Fox. Hey, big question about the game last week that they aired on Yahoo. How did you feel about that? I like them, you know, doing the whole, you know, trying to see how much pub they can get online with Yahoo, going through NFL networks, obviously. But you know, what did you think about them airing the game on Yahoo?
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting little move. I mean, I really appreciate that the NFL is or I don't know if I appreciate. I'd say that the NFL has certainly taken the initiative among the sports leagues to expose themselves, because, you know, Yahoo, although it may not be as big of an internet hub as it was in years prior, certainly commands a different audience that the NFL perhaps definitely wants to expose. So I commend the NFL for taking that stand. As far as the actual concept of, you know, live streaming games online, I think that's a difficult topic, Cass, because we've seen so many times in the past, and you're a boxing fan, so I'm sure you witnessed it, who will certainly grab that footage and put that in their own situations and own sources on the internet, where people will grab that footage, people will grab that live stream and redistribute it. So I think that aspect is one area that the NFL might have a little trouble in, because it's very hard to secure anything over the internet, as we've been able to see by the multitude of boxing streams that emerge whenever a big match comes up. So I don't know how regular this occurrence will be with Yahoo, but I would say this, it's a productive step forward that the NFL is using all the capabilities that they possibly can to expose their product. And that's definitely a business mindset, and it's a commendable effort, definitely.
Yes, I will plead the fifth on ever watching any of the boxing main events on a pirated stream. I do not recommend that at all. Getting back to the guys playing live this week. What do you think, man? Hey, at least we both know Detroit's not going to go completely, you know, winless for the season. And KC, man, I mean, it seems like just a week ago, I guess I should say, KC was, you know, on the uptick last season, looking real good, and then, you know, they really haven't gotten back to to playing really good football in quite a while. It seems to have been a complete season now at this point since KC's really played some good football, and of course they've got to deal with some injuries as well. I'm wondering how long it is for Andy Reid. So Detroit versus KC, maybe two jobs on the line there as they battle in England. So far, one team has gone to England and hasn't come back with their head coach. Well, kind of, sort of. That was the Miami Dolphins who fired Coach Philbin right after that game. So, like I said, Amiri, there are a lot of great matchups in football coming on, but there are a lot of great matchups on the ice. And you know what I'm leading up to? That's Ice Time with Amiri. We're bringing that early right at the top of the show. Ice Time with Amiri. Amiri, the New York Islanders, they seem to be starting off seasons real good. Are they going to be able to keep this up? Are we going to see them making a big push in the playoffs?
Yeah, that was the big question last year. We kind of got that same glimpse of early emergence from the New York Islanders. It's been an interesting start to the year because we obviously, with the new season, we've gotten a chance to get an even playing field for a lot of these teams. I'm interested in seeing, obviously, as you mentioned, whether or not the Islanders can keep this up. But the Rangers have also kind of flown under the radar to start this year. They're right in the same boat as the Islanders. Islanders 6-2, Rangers 7-2, Hots. This is going to be one of those years, I think, where we can get a chance of what we saw last year. And for anybody that got a chance to glimpse last year during the regular season, we saw that long stretch of Rangers, Islanders, Washington Capitals emerge, that triumvirate up top in the Metropolitan Division. And we've already gotten that thus far this year. Obviously, the Washington Capitals led by Alex Ovechkin, 16 points. Rangers, 16 points. Islanders, 15 points. And then my Devils round up the group at 13. So this Metropolitan Division is shaping up interestingly. Now on the flip side, though, Montreal has always been a solid team to start the year. We'll see if they can continue it. They right now lead the National Hockey League in victories. They have 10 wins, 2 losses, and they certainly have the grapple hold on that division thus far. Boston is the next closest team. So it's very early in the year, and hockey is a long, long 80-plus game campaign, including some of the postseason that we'll eventually get to see. So it's a long season of hockey, and I certainly think that while a lot of these teams have played very well thus far, it's been it's a little too early to kind of get a grapple hold on any of these divisions, any of these conferences, any of these teams. But I would say this, though, Haas, when you take a look at some of the teams locally, I think there has been a different little vibe to start this NHL season. I think we've seen a little bit more attention paid, especially to the New York Islanders, considering their move to Brooklyn, or at least their emergence in the new area. I think we've seen a little bit of a different vibe thus far this hockey season. I've heard a lot more conversations, even if it's a little minor or even if it's a beginner trying to understand the game. I've just felt a different energy about this hockey season. I'm looking forward to seeing kind of how the year progresses and kind of seeing how the fan bases emerge, especially here in this metropolitan area.
Wow, okay, so you're saying there's a little bit more of a buzz with the Islanders. Oh, yeah? You're liking the move to Brooklyn? I was wondering how that was going to be received by purists, by true, Islander hockey fans. You know, you've heard it, you've seen it online. They miss their team where they – but I mean, you're right. They're going to get more exposure being in Brooklyn, being in that arena. They're going to get more local fans as well. We'll see if the Islander fan base grows by a little bit. So that should be something interesting to watch. Great update there from Amiri. We'll go right into a Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout. Come out of the timeout, talk a little AFC East football as well with our man Reverend Ralph Mancini when he hits it. But hey, Amiri, go.
Indeed, hockey listeners out there can go follow me on Twitter at Amiri Tullo. That is AmiriTulloch. You can also find me at JG Sports Talk, jgsportstalk.com as well. And check out my student work, my school work, my extracurriculars over at thehighlandfling.wordpress.com.
And they can find me on hostileinterpretations.com. That's HAASSTYLE interpretations.com. And they can also catch me online on Twitter 24/7 at Jersey Haas. Hit me up anytime. My inbox is your inbox, josephhaasnfl@gmail.com. And do you need working capital? How can you improve your business? Contact me for more information on how you can make your business a better business. Joseph@castcapitalfunding.com. That's CAST capitalfunding.com. Hit me up anytime. I'll be able to help you out. In the meantime, helping you here on the Green and White Show. I'm Mary Tillich there. Joseph Haas here. Lots of Jets talk. Lots of Jets versus Oakland talk. A little NFL talk. Hey, Amiri, I got a question. I want to bring your team into the mix while we have a couple of minutes. Those New York Giants have made their agreement with JPP. JPP back practicing with the team. Your thoughts on possibly seeing JPP line up this season?
Yeah, I mean, Haas, I would in any other circumstance say that maybe the Giants are in a position where they might not need him, or in a position where they might be able to stay afloat without him. But I'm sure you've seen the ineptitude, desolate nature of this Giants defensive line, and I think although he might not be the presence that he was a couple of years ago, man, the Giants have really struggled to get any sort of production on that defensive line. So yes, 9 sacks in 7 games from the Jets, from the Giants rather, defensive line. Mm-hmm. It's been a very, very anemic start to the year. JPP could definitely, hopefully, improve that count. I don't know when he'll be ready to, you know, get back to his former self, or when he'll ever get back to his former self, if that happens. But I certainly think that the Jets, or oh my God, the Giants, Giants need something like the Jets on the defensive line, and get that pass presence emerging, because to this point in the year, Haas, it's been a difficult sight to see no production on the defensive end or defensive line position at all.
Yeah, we'll see how the Giants are able to add to that defensive line, which, like you said, not exactly potent as they've been in years past, and a JPP. We'll see how he recovers. You know, he's talking about just loving being back, and I'd like to see him, you know, get back to playing somewhere near, like you said, the kind of football that he was known for playing. Prince Amukamara, also, I believe he's still, you know, mending. So the Giants' defense gonna, you know, it's gonna take a hit. But you know, they're challenging. They're resilient as well. There are a lot of great games on the slate. They'll be at New Orleans to take on the Saints, who've, you know, come back up a little bit. They'd love to take out the Giants and get to a 4-4. The Giants still, you know, in a tough NFC East. It should be a good matchup down there as well. There are a lot of great games as well. Amiri, I'm anticipating this Green Bay Denver game. I'm gonna be paying attention to my Mets, but I know the rest of the world is gonna be watching the Battle of Aaron Rodgers versus Peyton Manning. Are you going to be watching the Battle of Aaron Rodgers versus Peyton Manning?
Yes, that honestly, I mean, when you talk about two of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League, I certainly think anytime you get a chance to see them face to face, head to head, especially on a Sunday night game like that, 6-0 teams, that is going to be a matchup. Certainly all eyes will be on Haas. And I'm interested in seeing which of those 6-0 teams will be knocked out. I mean, the Green Bay Packers kind of been emerging threat this year, obviously, as a Super Bowl candidate, and I think every year, really, they've always been in that conversation. But being able to start the year 6-0, their defense has been fantastic this year. Their offense, obviously, has been on point. And same with the Broncos. I mean, we there were a lot of questions early on about whether or not Peyton Manning will be Peyton Manning of the past. And Haas, you know, I think that's a rhetorical question. Obviously, he will be in a position where he'll always be a winner, but as the years progress, he will definitely, obviously, naturally, his play will not equal the play of 18, 20 years ago. So I would certainly say that matchup would captivate a lot of people, no doubt about it.
Here's someone who we always love bringing, always captivating the audience, here to talk AFC East with the Rest Report, our good friend Reverend Ralph Mancini. Follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. My man, good morning to you. Glad you got your clock set straight. We knew we'd have you on time. What's up, buddy?
Hey, good happy Sunday, fellas.
Yeah, we're in November, my man. We got everybody on the horn here. Joseph Haas here, Mary Tillich there, and Reverend Ralph Mancini. We'll go through the AFC East first, get into some of that, and then, of course, the rest of the NFL with you, giving us some extra time here on a Sunday morning, the first of many in the month of November. Whew, I'm feeling this football. I'm loving the London game. How about you? And watching the New England Patriots, Ralph, they're dominant. They're going as far as Tom Brady's arm is going to take them. Your thoughts on how far the New England Patriots are going to go this season, and whether they will end up in an AFC Championship game with, let's say, the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that game Thursday night was just disappointing to watch. just from an entertainment value. I mean, you knew that the New England Patriots are going to come out strong. You know, Belichick, you know, prepares his team the right way on a short week. He had the running game going, which he didn't have versus the Jets, but he had everything planned out in terms of, you know, he rested his running backs during the Jets game, had them ready to go against the Dolphins. But the one part that was disappointing was the Dolphins never showed up, especially in terms of their offense. Now, from a defensive standpoint, I think Miami did a pretty decent job of keeping the team in the game for the most part, maybe, you know, for about a half or three quarters. But the offense just wasn't there, and you have to point a lot of the blame to Ryan Tannehill. It all starts with that safety where he just looked like he had his head in the clouds, missing receivers, making bad decisions. I mean, at this point, if you're a Dolphins fan, you really have to wonder, I mean, is this guy the quarterback who's going to lead you to the promised land? Is he really your franchise quarterback? He's been there for a few years now. I know he's still a young quarterback. But, he's got to show something, you know. Against the Patriots, he just wasn't up to the task.
Now, I'm interested, you know, you get a chance to see some of the divisional matchups that have played out in this AFC East. What is your pulse after 6 weeks of kind of how this division will go? Obviously, a crucial matchup between the Jets and the Patriots, but as far as the two other teams, the Bills and the Dolphins, your thoughts on how their seasons will progress 6 weeks in?
Yeah, the Dolphins have shown some positive signs. You like what the new coach Dan Campbell has done, focusing more on the running game. But now you have the injury to Cameron Wake, which makes you think that, you know, the defense is going to suffer. I mean, he was their best pass rusher. He wasn't only their best pass rusher. He is one of the best pass rushers in the league, and he has suffered that Achilles injury, which basically wipes out his season. So, how they bounce back from that injury is going to tell you how they're going to do this season. And then offensively, I just need to see more consistency from Ryan Tannehill, as I mentioned. But I do like, as I said, the new focus on the running game. The offensive line now, it looks to be relatively healthy, although they did lose their right tackle, Juwan James, for a few weeks, it seems. So a lot of question marks at the Miami Dolphins. Look, it's one thing to beat the Tennessee Titans, but you got to bring it versus the big boys, and right now they look like about, at this point, you would have to say maybe about a 7 or 8 win team at best, and maybe even that's being generous. The Buffalo Bills, I think one of the things they need to clean up is their penalties. They're the most penalized team in the NFL, and you have to play smart football to win in the NFL. It's not just about being physical. We all know how Rex Ryan is. He's a tough guy. He wants tough guys on his team, but you got to play smart. I think the fact that they have Tyrod Taylor back, I think, is going to be key. I think he is way better, obviously, than E.J. Manuel. You like the fact that LeSean McCoy is healthy, because a lot of what they do on offense is going to be based on that running game. You would have to think that coming out of the bye week, their backup running back, Carlos Williams, is going to be healthy, and that's going to help. But what's the story at the receiver position? Because Percy Harvin is injured, Watkins is injured, and so they're going to need some of those backups to step up, namely Robert Woods. Chris Hogan to step up. So, again, a lot of question marks at the Buffalo Bills as well. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, coming out of the bye week, I think the Buffalo Bills might be in a little bit of better shape than the Miami Dolphins, but there's still a lot of uncertainties with both those teams.
Well, what both teams are doing, or at least trying to compete and at least catch up to the New York Jets, is we're joined here by Reverend Ralph Mancini and Mary Tillich. They're Joseph Foss here at Green and White Show. What I did want to ask you about, and what, you know, what's been, you know, kind of, you know, in the news with the Patriots, it's another Spygate-type scandal with the Patriots. Why are they always a team that's caught up in situations where it seems like they're on the edge or skirting football rules? Is this going to tarnish their legacy as being, I mean, let's all admit it. They're a little bit of a dynasty, you know, the last few years. They're what the NFL is as a championship team. But is this going to tarnish their legacy by always being caught up in these little, you know, kind of off to the side scandals here with the Patriots? Ralph, I mean, what do you think? I mean, is this going to really tarnish them or what?
I think it tarnishes them to a point, but I think years from now, I believe that people are just going to remember the fact that they were successful. They're going to remember the fact that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have been just so – they've been able to withstand the test of time, and they've been so successful consistently year after year after year. So I think, you know, after – you know, we can't really say right now how they're going to be remembered. I just have a feeling that, as I said, 5-10 years from now – I think their successes are going to be remembered more than, you know, the scandals and the controversy. Because, you know, if you get really down to it, I mean, which coach out there isn't looking for an edge? You know, they probably, you know, take this, this gamesmanship, if you will, they take it to another level. But I think really, you know, what do we as fans really know about, like, these other teams and coaches in terms of what they're trying to do and what type of secrets they're trying to find out and what type of tactics they're trying to employ? I mean, this isn't new, man. If you're an NFL historian, I mean, a lot of this stuff was going on back in the 60s and the 70s, you know, with Al Davis and a lot of these characters. You know, you go back to George Allen, who was coaching the Redskins back in the 70s. You know, obviously, you know, I wasn't watching football back then, it's nothing new. You know, it just happens to be that the Patriots happen to be successful. And, you know, Tom Brady is a big-time quarterback. And, you know, what they do or what they try to do in terms of, you know, gamesmanship, it's going to be magnified because they are the Patriots, because they're on TV, they're on prime time so many times during the year.
I don't know. I just feel like it just doesn't it. You know, it takes away, in my opinion, some of what they do. But you're right, it is a lot of gamesmanship. It's just, you know, it probably won't in the end tarnish the legacy of the New England Patriots throughout. But I just feel like, that, you know, they don't really need to get involved in all this stuff. They don't really need to do most of the stuff, and they just end up doing it anyway. And, you know, I just don't find it as something that's appealing to me. I'd rather they didn't. I'd rather they just kind of played football, went out there and lined up, and if they could blow out teams that way. But I just don't feel comfortable with. You know, it kind of makes me feel kind of iffy at them. You know, I look at them one way and I just kind of look at them kind of side.
I'm not defending Belichick. I'm just
saying, I know you're
look,
not.
A lot of these coaches, they're under a lot of pressure. You know, they want to keep their jobs. And, you know, one bad season is going to wipe all of that away. So what I'm telling you is there are a lot of coaches that if they have their backs against the wall, they're going to do a lot of the same stuff that the Patriots try to pull off.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, you know, I just don't hear, you know, I know, of course, I say this in the next week, something will come out about them, but you don't hear teams like the Steelers or the Giants, you know, doing things like this. I mean, even the Redskins, who have had their issues, you don't hear too much about. I don't know. I just don't think the Patriots need to be getting involved in this. But let's get involved in some of the great matchups that are going to go on later this Sunday. We've already talked a little bit about the game in London. So, Ralph, got to get your opinion on the game in London. How do you feel about it? I mean, are you enjoying these games in London? Do you feel the NFL is kind of, you know, warming us up for a possible team in London and getting, you know, more than three or four, but possibly getting, I guess, 8 games in London?
You know, quite frankly, I'm not a big fan of these early games. I get the feeling that Roger Goodell, he just doesn't care about the fan. He doesn't care about the fact that now you're forcing the real NFL fan who wants to watch all these teams and be an informed supporter of the league, he doesn't care about the fact that now you're forcing a lot of these people to basically watch all these games and be on their couches from about 9:30 in the morning until about midnight. It's a little inconvenient, I have to be honest with you. I mean, if you're somebody who has a family, who has responsibilities, look, you're going to carve out time to watch the NFL. But now you're going to have to basically, watch the NFL from 9:30 until midnight, and that's a big commitment. You know, we all have lives. We have stuff to do. We have responsibilities. We have errands to run, so I'm not a big fan. I have to tell you, I'm not a big fan of these early games.
I know,
like,
makes
I'm not a big fan of, those late games during Thanksgiving,
Two of my favorite times of the year. I love all these extra games. Hey, look, I'm going to go out. I'm going to run all my errands during Sundays, all the errands I would normally run before the 1 o'clock games, just that I'm going to have my tablet with me or my cell phone with me, and I'll be watching the game as I'm doing whatever, getting my hair cut, doing laundry, doing all those things. So it's just going to be fun for me to not have to be perfectly honest, the only thing that I miss, and I don't really miss, is the studio shows that I like watching. Like, I won't be watching the NFL Network studio show because I'll be watching an actual game. That'll be it.
Yep.
If you have a family that likes to watch football, a wife, kids, father, mother, whatever, everybody likes to watch football, that's fine, I guess. But when you're the only member of your family that even has an interest in watching these games, it's kind of tough. You're watching TV and everybody's pulling you to the dinner table. So, I understand why he's doing it. But it's a bit of an inconvenience to some people.
Well, I guess let me ask you this then: we talked about this a little earlier, the Yahoo Sports stream that the NFL did last week. That's a little bit different, but I still think the same general gist of trying to expose your audience and broaden your audience is something that I think the NFL is getting right. Do you agree with the Yahoo Sports decision, or was that a little bit out of hand in your opinion?
Yeah, that doesn't bother me. I think in this day and age, I think most of us are internet savvy. And even if you're not internet savvy, you probably know somebody who is, and somebody who can get you access to Yahoo.com. So it really doesn't bother me. One feature game available through Yahoo. That's not a big issue for me.
Hey, Amiri, I'm going to whisper this next promo as to not upset Ralph. Lions, Chiefs, 9:30 a.m., kickoff in London. Shh, don't tell Reverend Ralph. Okay, back to the green and white show. Just messing with you, buddy. Hey, we're going to have a lot of fun here pre-gaming it. Like I said, there are a lot of other matchups going on. Hey, the Pittsburgh Steelers, we'll see if Big Ben's as close to 100% as possible. Bengals. Steelers in Pittsburgh. Bengals still riding high. You know how I feel about the Bengals. I'm not going to believe them until I see them in the postseason. Ralph, how do you feel about the Bengals going into Pittsburgh?
I hear you about that. I think this game is going to be fun to watch. Obviously, I think you have a lot of playmakers on both sides, especially from an offensive standpoint. Look, the Pittsburgh Steelers. For as many playmakers as they have on defense, they do give up a lot of yards, a lot of numbers to opposing passing attacks. So I think this is going to be another week where Andy Dalton is going to have some success. They got Giovanni Bernard. They got the receivers A.J. Green, Marvin Jones, Tyler Eifert, who's really been a breakout performer this season. I think both teams should be able to put up points in this one. I think the defense that steps up and forces a couple of turnovers in key moments, I think that's going to be the team that wins, the team that comes up with that one pivotal play on defense. But it's going to be a good close game, I believe.
Interesting. We're here with Reverend Ralph Mancini on the Green and White Show here on the 8:48 p.m. a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, as you take a look at the NFL season thus far, is there one one matchup, one team in particular that has surprised you the most this early start into the NFL season? We're 6 weeks in. I don't want to say early anymore. We're about halfway through, determining what a team will be. But is there a team, is there a player that has really stood out to you as something or somebody that has kind of surprised you?
Well, not so much a team, but a player, and I did reference him, it's Andy Dalton. The fact that he has been so accurate, especially even as a deep passer. Now, I do realize that, a lot of his guys, a lot of his targets, a lot of his weapons are healthy this year, particularly A.J. Green and Eifert, and Marvin Jones for that matter. But the fact that he's been, so consistent and so accurate, especially on his deep balls, I think that has surprised me. Now, again, will he be able to sustain this, and will he be able to step up in the playoffs? That remains to be seen. But, I have to say, Dalton has been somebody who's really surprised me, and there's been talk that if he continues this, he might be in the running for the MVP award at the end of the season. As far as teams go, I guess you could say the Cardinals are.
I was hoping you said the Cardinals. I was hoping you said the Cardinals.
Yeah, I kind of had a feeling that they were going to be solid as long as Carson Palmer was healthy, and he's been healthy up to now. So, and what I do like about the Cardinals is that they're one of the more balanced teams out there in terms of having a solid defense, in terms of having a good running game, and having a good ground attack where they don't rely on one runner, in the fact that they do have three runners who can all make plays out there. So, I would say the Cardinals are a bit of a surprise, and they're definitely a top contender, a team that could go all the way, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking very strongly at the Arizona Cardinals. You know how I pay particular attention to the NFC West and how good they're doing. There's a lot of talent there, and the Cardinals are definitely showing that on offensive side of the ball, taking that chance on Chris Johnson, and he's looking pretty good in that red uniform. You look at their defense and how they're excelling as well. They seem to just have an all-star team down there, and they seem ready to make that push in the NFC. So NFC, watch out. You've got teams like the Green Bay Packers who are going to go up against the Denver Broncos later tonight and what's going to be an outstanding matchup. And then, you've got the Carolina Panthers there, Rev. And I got to ask you, the Colts go into Carolina. They're going to take on the Panthers Monday night. What are you thinking? What are you thinking right now? Are you thinking that Cam Newton and them, they're ready for the show, that this is the Carolina team? This is the one that's going to actually make a put, not bow out in the second round of the playoffs, but actually, challenge possibly a Green Bay, challenge possibly an Arizona for the NFC crown?
When you take a look at a team like Carolina, it's not one of the more glamorous teams just because they don't have a ton of playmakers on offense, and more times than not, they're not going to put up a lot of big points. They're not going to have a lot of, 35, 38-point games. But they don't make a ton of mistakes. They're well-coached. They're a good defensive team. So, going into this game against Indianapolis, I think, what Indianapolis has to do is they're going to have to focus on the running game. And one of the things that has worked for the Colts is Frank Gore. He has been pretty solid. I think if they focus on running the ball with him, keeping the Panthers and Cam Newton off the field as much as possible, I think they could make this a close game. But I'm not liking what I'm seeing out of Andrew Luck. So if they put it on his shoulders, I think it could be a long night for the Indianapolis coach just because I'm not sure if Andrew Luck is just 100% healthy with that shoulder of his. He hasn't been as accurate. His deep balls haven't been as effective as they have been in the past. Indianapolis's defense, they just lack playmakers, period. So unless they really, keep it conservative, take time off the clock with Frank Gore, I think this is going to be, has the potential of being another blowout victory by the Carolina Panthers.
On the way out the door, the great Reverend Ralph Mancini joins us every Sunday to give us the rest report, where we talk about the rest of the AFC East, and we get a little Jets conversation in there as well, plus the rest of the NFL. Reverend Ralph Mancini, follow him on Twitter, at Reverend Ralph. Before I let you go, my man, I'm going to have to drop an extra point question on you. I hope you got a chance to check out the way the Miami Hurricanes won the football game last night on this I can't believe it kickoff return for touchdown. I still can't believe it. I'm baffled. I can't believe that can actually work, and it did. And I kept looking for a flag. I kept looking for him to trip up and fall. But once he broke away past the 30, I go, you know what? This guy's going to score, and they're never going to stop showing this. So what did you think of that play?
Oh, it was nuts. I mean, that you see that stuff a lot, but it just never works. But the fact that they were able to complete 8 laterals on that one play was just amazing. Now, there was a little bit of controversy because there was one player that, you know, they mentioned that his knee might have touched the ground at one point. But, you know, I looked at the replay. That could have happened. Who knows? But the fact that, again, you know, they were able to complete those 8 laterals, and they were persistent, and everybody was pretty much on the same page. It was just amazing. That was the epitome of teamwork on that one play. Fun to watch. You know, you should cherish it, because you're not going to see that. You might not see that play work for like another 5 or 6 years.
Right.
Yeah, college football always giving us a little something. Amiri, you got to tell me how you felt when you saw that going back and forth and the opportunity for that to go in. And then you finally see the guy cross the goal line and you just can't believe it.
Yeah. I was a little hesitant at first. I was a little concerned that they might call that play back. And in the days after, there's been a couple conversations emerging about, you know, the legality of that play. But I think in a situation like that, as Reverend Ralph just mentioned, that's a once in a decade kind of play. Like that's the kind of play that you have to cherish. And if I didn't see it live, but if you were able to witness that live, and you were able to witness that as it happened, or if you were even in the stadium as a Duke fan or as a U fan, I mean, either way, that is one of those moments that really you will never forget. And, you know, I think that's part of the reason why I think a lot of people love college football so much. And obviously that play happened in the NFL a couple of years ago with Tennessee back in the day. But we've seen that a lot. We've seen those lucky emergences of fortune happen on so many occasions in college football. So perhaps that is a college football thing. Maybe that is one of the benefits of being able to witness college football, those unbelievable, you know, mind-blowing moments taking place. And so it was a fantastic moment, and we've been able to, you know, been gifted with that a couple times this year already.
I believe we don't have to wait every decade to have the great Reverend Ralph Mancini join us and talk football. We get his all-star abilities every Sunday morning. Thanks for joining us, buddy. We'll catch you again next week. Enjoy the football.
Always fun, guys. Enjoy.
Thanks again.
Thanks again, the Reverend Ralph Mancini joining us on the program. Always fun, always entertaining, always with the analysis as well. Look, Amiri, we're going to get quickly into a Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout, then turn the show over to the top of the hour, which means, you know, no holes barred. We'll have Bigger, Badder Benway on, and, you know, he's going to have at least one or two crazy thoughts for us for the day. But in the meantime, man, I really love the 9:30 a.m. football. I'm not worried about it. Like, I'm going to have my phone out, and I'm going to be doing whatever, and you know, I've always had the rest of the family involved in football. I mean, I love football because my mom loves football, okay? Like, I come in the house, and there's the sound of football, and I look, and on the big screen, there's a game, and there's my mom chilling, and she's like, you know, straight analysis, like I've got an ESPN broadcaster sitting on the couch. I love it. So that's why, you know, football's always been a big thing here. Ryan Fitzpatrick, timeout. My man, Amiri, go.
Indeed, Haas. The listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week over at jgsportstalk.com, at jgsportstalk on Twitter. You can also follow me over at Amiri Tulloch. That is AmiriTulloch.
Hey, they know they can catch me anytime on HostileInterpretations.com every Sunday here on the Green and White Show on Twitter at Jersey Haas. My inbox is Joseph Haas NFL. At gmail.com as well, so please hit me up there. It's always fun doing the Green and White Show. There's my man, Amiri Tulloch. We are heading into the top of the hour. Great slate of NFL football games in half an hour. The NFL will kick off in London. again. Seems like we're always seeing that. This week it's the Detroit Lions versus the Kansas City Chiefs. You can watch that on Fox, or like I'm going to do, watch it on my phone, like Mr. Manning's saying. So I'll definitely be doing that. Hey, some great college football games. We can talk about that before we get our man Brian Benway on. And one incident in college football, which is going to dominate pretty much the headlines, is going to be the JT Barrett conversation, the JT Barrett, you know, getting suspended one game. The Ohio State quarterback operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. So he's going to miss a game. Ohio State, undefeated, number one team in the nation. Is this going to make a big difference? We're going to talk about that and a lot more. We're going to start the top of the hour with our man, Brian Benway. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not with an I, folks. We're getting ready to talk some NFL football, college football. The World Series, yeah, we're going to have to talk about that as well. But, Brian, how you doing this morning, my man?
Happy daylight saving time, everyone.
Yes, yes, it's a holiday. I saw a tweet that said we should do this, kind of every day or every week, and I pretty much nominated that guy for president. He's getting my vote. He's getting my vote for president.
My favorite part, though, of daylight savings time is when you're at the bar and 2 o'clock rolls around and you think it's supposed to close, bam, you get another hour when it turns back the clock.
Bonus hour. That's what I'm talking about here. Like I said, Brian Benway never he never holds back. He's always full bore with his analysis. Okay, give me some right now. NBA season starts. I know we're going to get into that, but I want to start with last night's Major League Baseball World Series game. The Mets booting it all over the diamond. Not able to go and tie. I mean, that's all they needed was to tie the game, have Matt Harvey pitch today. Right now, the New York fan base feeling a little about it. Terry Collins named Manager of the Year, but the Mets go down 5-3 to the Royals last night, and they're down in the series 3-1. Brian,
doing okay?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm hooked up to a respirator.
Well, but here's the funny part, though. Well, it's probably not funny for you guys, but all of the new Mets fans, now they know what you guys have been dealing with for a long time, all this disappointment.
Yeah, you can't be on the bandwagon without knowing what it feels like to ride on it. People are people are reminding us so much of what happened in this year and that year and oh so close and yeah the same old Mets just like the same old Jets chance. So you get a young player like Conforto hitting 2 home runs and you think it's gonna be this epic story. You know, we're gonna talk about this game forever. This kid came out of nowhere and hit 2 and next thing you know you've got Cespedes. You know, booting the ball around and then him with the ill-advised running off of first base to end the game getting doubled up. You got Murphy letting the ball go under his glove. It's just, and all this happening in Citi Field. You could hear the excitement in Flushing. Like, I could literally feel, the 7 train shaking. And then, now it's kind of everybody, as the city wakes up for the New York Marathon, there's a somber feeling in the city. Like, this game is it. This is it. Matt Harvey for the season.
It is, but I always look at baseball. Baseball is such a crazy game, because you can have an error one night, and the next night you can hit 2 home runs. So you never really know what's going to happen at a baseball game, which is why I've always been a huge baseball fan. So if you're a Mets fan and if you're a Royals fan, the Royals obviously need one more win to take the World Series tonight. Lots of folks on a Sunday night are going to be watching this game. You have Matt Harvey, who has had a fantastic season. So I think if you are a Mets fan, you look at this like, hey, if Harvey can do what he has done in the past 6-7 innings, giving up 1 run, maybe 2 runs, you have a great shot. You're at home, so you want to try and get up early, like we've seen the Mets do in the last series, quite a bit. And what you want to look at is every inning, every pitch. I know it sounds really simple and it sounds like it's a cliche, but when you look at, hey, you win this game, then you're down 3-2. You go back to KC. You pull out that game, anything can happen in a game 7. But I will say this, I did pick the Royals to win it in 5, and I haven't been right in a long time, so I'm kind of going for the Royals just because I want to be right. It's nice to be correct once in a while, and it's a good story for KC too.
You know, they haven't won a World Series in forever, and their fan base has been, you know, struggling for a lot of these years too. So I think you have both of the franchises looking, you know, for a first title, you know, since the 80s, which is, you know, what we're looking at this series. But my thing is, it's going to be a great game because it's been a really entertaining series. So you look at it one game at a time, and Harvey goes out tonight, pitches well, and we're going back to KC. That's how everybody has to look at
it. I'm not your friend anymore.
So I'm not on the Christmas card list anymore. I got my first Christmas card, I swear to God, yesterday. People are already
serious?
Sending out Christmas cards. I swear, I'm not even joking.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me a Christmas card. Of course, it was an advertisement Christmas card. They're like, hey, you can get 30% off on your Christmas decorations. But still, I'm upset that I'm not going to be getting a Christmas card from you.
Especially if the Royals win in five, it might not be a ho 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 season for us. I'm not going to be too happy if the Mets don't win, especially with you calling it KC winning in five. It actually looks like that might be what it is. But you know, moving forward, as I weep a little bit here, Brian Benway joining us on the show and kind of breaking my heart here with his Kansas City Royals prediction. But a lot going on in the NBA. Hey, look, man. It looks like all the good teams and all the great players are all starting out good to great. Steph Curry, what up? 53 points last night, brushing shoulders off, crossing people over, deep shots. He'll shoot over anybody. So Steph Curry lighting it up. It looks like, you know, LeBron James and that whole back injury is not really that much of a concern. I'm looking at Carmelo Anthony getting out of the gates really hot. You look at Kevin Durant and Westbrook. This is great. I'm loving this early NBA right now. How are you guys feeling? Amiri, Brian, what do you guys think of the early NBA?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, well, you take a look at some of the, obviously, the big performances that have played out thus far. I saw Steph Curry drop 53 last night, which was incredible. Correct me if I'm wrong. Let me throw this question. I just posted this on my Twitter as well. Is it correct of me to say that now the conversation needs to emerge? Steph Curry continues this, he might be in the conversation for greatest shooter of all time.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely up there, but I don't know. It's still early. Brian, what do you think, greatest shooter of all time?
I think Steph Curry actually scored 10 points overnight while we were sleeping, too. I mean, that dude was unbelievable. That dude was great. He's so fun to watch. A couple of other things that I'm looking at, too, is I love the Bulls so far early on. Now, I'm sure Derrick Rose will be hurt in about 3 days. But you have to look at the Bulls. I love this Bulls team defensively. And I know during the playoffs the last couple of years, I was on the show and I was talking about how much I loved the Bulls defense. And you saw in that first game against Cleveland how they're just such a great defensive team. And I'm looking at the Bulls early on as one of those teams. A team I'm also looking at, they got blown out the other night in L.A., but I'm looking at the Mavericks. I'm a big fan of what the Mavericks have done. One game, as we all know, game two getting blown out of an 82-game schedule does not make a year. We all know that. So I'm looking forward to watch them and the Lakers in L.A. So you're looking at those couple of teams for me, Bulls and Mavericks. But the teams that you mentioned, you know, you're looking at Golden State. They're obviously going to be there at the end this year. But as far as Steph Curry, greatest shooter of all time, he's got to be up there from what we've seen. I'm going to go back to a couple of guys that I grew up watching in the 90s. You've got to put Reggie Miller, I think, up
right
there. Larry Bird, of course, when Larry Bird was at his prime. Steve Kerr, let's not forget about Steve Kerr, the coach for Steph Curry. Steve Kerr, I believe at one time, had a record or was close to a record for best three-point shooting percentage. So I'm going with those guys. And an interesting comment, I think it was from Reggie Miller, who talking about Steph Curry, Drazen Petrovic, you guys remember him?
Oh,
the
I was
Nets
just going to say that. I was waiting for you to finish. I was so waiting for you to finish. I dropped one of my favorite players of all time on everybody, Drazen Petrovic. People sleep on how good of a shooter he was. Ball player.
Yep.
I mean, his
his going back and forth, you can actually find them on YouTube, him versus Jordan. Unbelievable shooting efforts from Drazen Petrovic. I was so waiting. I was just like, okay, no one's saying Drazen. I got to get my boy some love. Somebody's got to say Petro. Because, I mean, he was on fire for the Nets. Life, you know, his playing career cut short just tragically. And I just really thought that that guy was, man, just up there. He had a shot or two to get his team off the mat, playing for the Nets pretty much his whole career. Would have loved to have seen what he could have done on a real, you know, with a real playoff push. Drazen Petrovic, one of the greatest shooters of all time that doesn't get enough credit. So thanks for bringing him up on the show. I feel good now, Brian. You are my friend again.
Yes, I'm so pumped up about that. You don't even know. But yeah, Drazen was so fun to watch, though. God, such a quick release.
Unbelievable three-point shooter as well. Amiri, I know that you know might be a little bit before your time, but you've got to pull up a little bit on Drazen Petrovic. He's like, who? but he does. I mean, very talented player. He came over with Šunas Marcelonis. He was part of that whole wave of Eastern European players who came over and really impacted the league and on a high level. Drazen Petrovic had the chance to play with guys like Derek Coleman. I believe Greg Anthony was also on some of those teams. So there were some real offensive players on those teams back in the day, and Drazen, you know, really being a real force in the NBA and putting the Nets on the map. They were on for a little blip there, kind of when Barkley was on the Spurs. I mean, the Suns. So they were on the map for a little bit, and Drazen being an all-star player at that caliber. But instead of hitting the Wayback Machine on the NBA, let's talk about some things that are happening right now in the NCAA and in the rest of the NFL. NCAA, Michigan holding on and beating Minnesota. That would have been a heartbreaker if they lost. Stanford holding on and beating the Cougars. That would have been a heartbreaker had Stanford lost. So those are a couple of really tight nail biters. But a couple of incidents in college football that I want to bring to the roundtable here. Amiri Tulik there. We're being joined by Brian Benway. Joseph Haas here. Brian Kelly. I mean, what's going on with that guy? He goes after an assistant coach, shoves him. That's not the only sideline incident that happened yesterday. You had a coach shoving a player, not on the same team. Can you tell me what's going on with these sidelines in college football? Amiri, hit it first, and then Brian Benway, back it up.
Yeah, I saw that video. I don't know what went down between those two figures, butting heads, obviously. And you know, the interesting thing is, I think there's an interesting, I don't want to say excuse, but there's an interesting narrative that always emerges whenever you get in those situations where we see a player versus a coach versus a coach, a player versus a player get heated on the sidelines during a game. And often the argument that is that people fall to is that, you know, it's in the heat of the moment. And in some situations, I can understand the Greg Hardy, Dez Bryant situation from last week. Perhaps that was the heat of the moment, situation between those two. But for me, there really is no excuse for a head coach to touch an assistant coach, or at least to grab at an assistant coach like Brian Kelly did. So that, to me, makes me a little skeptical about what the true meaning was. And it's hard for me to put that on the heat of the moment kind of situation, because that's one of those things, Haas, that you and Brian, that you just really never do, or one of those situations that should never happen on a sideline, especially when you're trying to be a role model to college kids.
And when you look at it and take it a step further for Notre Dame, I mean, this is a Catholic school here, right? So if you're a Notre Dame fan, if you're a Notre Dame alum, you have to kind of take it a step further with, okay, this guy, Brian Kelly, who I think is a fantastic coach, I don't think there's anything, that says otherwise there. And the heat of the moment thing, I'm with you, Mary. I kind of get sick and tired of hearing people say, heat of the moment. You know what? You're a grown man. You're on the sidelines. I get it's an intense football game, but there's no reason for that. And if you're looking at Notre Dame, you take it a step further and you say, hey, Brian Kelly, in a way, not only represents Notre Dame, the school, but also represents, you know, looking at Catholics, because it's a Catholic school. And we saw some issues with Notre Dame years ago when you're talking about things that the Catholic Church looks down upon, and that's a whole other story for a whole other day. But because I think it's going to be a little bit bigger of a story is because Notre Dame is obviously one of the most popular teams in the country, and they have a certain reputation because they are linked to the Catholic Church and Brian Kelly and all that. But I go back to coaches going after players. That's completely unacceptable. If it's on your own team, if it's on the opposing team, it's a grown man, a head coach of a team, going against a teenage kid who's playing college football. That's completely unacceptable. And I don't know what's in the water with those, but you're looking at those and you're like, wow, did that actually just happen? That cannot be acceptable for either party. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if we're going to see suspensions, fines levied. I don't know. Probably not in the Notre Dame case because he went after his own assistant coach, but still,
oh, there should be some
it's unacceptable.
There. Yeah, that's unacceptable, but there should be some discipline there. From a head coach, you've got to have a little bit more. I mean, you've got to, you're representing, like you said, not just representing the university. He's actually representing a section of the population, all right? And he's just got to have a little bit more self-control. I mean, we've already heard of Kelly and you know, earlier incidents of him really, you know, loud-mouthing and barking and really cursing out some of his own players, people not liking the way that he spoke to some of his players. And just like you said, they're young college kids playing college football, so he's got to dial that back a bit, and he's just shown, and this is now a reputation thing. It's not just a once or two or two time thing. He's got a reputation of not being able to kind of control himself. You know, both on camera. I mean, he's done the yelling at his students in on camera, live football TV. You know, NBC has all the Notre Dame games, so you see all the Notre Dame games that are on another network. You'll see him in every game he coaches. And in every game he coaches, you know, you used to see him barking at his kids, and now you don't see that so much. But this incident, you know, with the coach brings all that back up. So there's got to be some discipline. I you know, from a school like Notre Dame, you need to see them, you know, kind of step forward in a situation like this. And anytime a coach shoves a kid, just like you said, that's just there's absolutely no excuse for, especially, you know, they're not even on the same team. There's just no excuse for adults putting their hands on youngsters, you know. So both of those get thumbs down in my opinion. Thumbs up always in my opinion. Whenever we have Brian Benway joining us on the program. Amiri Tulik there, Joseph Haas here, to the Green and White Show. We talked a little hockey before we got into some of the NFL matchups. Brian, we want to get you in on some of these NFL matchups. It's going to be a great one tonight, Green Bay versus Denver. You know I'm going to be paying attention to the Mets and their last hopes with Matt Harvey. But Green Bay at Denver, two perfect teams, perfect battle, perfect night for football. What do you think? Who do you think is coming out on top?
I think Green Bay will win this one, and I don't know how many people – are picking Green Bay. I don't know. Tell me this, guys. Are you shocked that the Broncos are still undefeated with the offense going a complete 180 as to what they have been? And that just shows the caliber of the Broncos defense. And when you were having Peyton Manning his first couple of years in Denver putting up all those huge numbers, nobody really noticed the defense. Nobody really talked about the defense, and nor myself. I'm going to put myself in that same category. But now, when you have this Broncos team, the offense is not the best work we've seen from Peyton Manning, but yet they're 6-0. They're unbeaten. So you have to put a little bit more emphasis on the Bronco defense. But I'm going to go with Green Bay tonight for a couple of reasons. One, Aaron Rodgers is playing a heck of a lot better than Peyton Manning. So I think they can go into Denver and they can put up a little bit more points than this Bronco team does. And I'm going to go down to the end of the game. I think we're going to get a close one tonight. I think Aaron Rodgers is the difference. I think Peyton will make a mistake late in this game. So I'm going to go Green Bay winning in the Mile High City tonight.
Ooh, Amiri, who are you taking?
That's a tough one. I feel like I'm going to go with Denver. I think that home field advantage might play into this game. And I don't know exactly how Peyton Manning will come out. Will he come out guns a-blazing? Will this Denver Broncos team comes out you know, guns a-blazing compared to a Green Bay team that is on the road, is definitely trying to make that first impression? We've seen, obviously, Denver struggle at times to open up games. So I would say that if Green Bay gets out to a quick start, I think it would be difficult for me to go against them considering the talent that they have. But I think that I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos in this one. If they can get out on top at first, I think I'm going to go Denver, man.
Okay. just okay. I just wanted to, okay. number one and number two. Wait, hold on a second. Nobody's mentioned the Denver Broncos defense. They're going to have a say in this football game. Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback playing right now, and I understand that. He's got himself some offensive weapons as well. But there's absolutely no way I'm not going to say that the Denver defense isn't going to dictate what happens in this football game. Okay? They're going to be able to keep Aaron Rodgers at bay. They're going to be able to keep Aaron Rodgers off the scoreboard. Will they? I was leaning Green Bay in this game earlier in the season, but now that it's come down to this and I'm seeing how well the Denver Broncos defense is playing, they'll have the home field advantage. I'm looking for the Broncos to hold off the Packers. This is going to be a tough one. Now watch Aaron Rodgers throw for 6 touchdowns because I said that. It's going to be a tough battle. You're going to see it's going to be a battle of Broncos defense versus Packers defense. Broncos defense will win this game. It's going to be ugly. It's not going to be the high-flying, high-scoring game that we all think it's going to be. Yeah, like I said, watch Aaron Rodgers throw for 6 touchdowns. Okay, Broncos will beat the Packers. We need to go back and get ourselves a Jets prediction for this game. I know who I'm pulling for. I say the Jets are going to go ahead and throttle the Oakland Raiders in Oakland. It's about that time the New York Jets go out there and put a stranglehold and defeat a team they're supposed to defeat. Yeah, they're a little beat up in the secondary, but I just don't think the Oakland Raiders have enough to match up with the front 7 of the New York Jets. That perfect swarm. My theme this today is defense. Amiri, your thoughts. Who do you think winning? Jets, Oakland, and then Brian, you got to get your prediction on Jets, Oakland.
I think I'm going to go with the Jets. I fully expect the Jets to come out on top early in this game, and we've seen in the past that when the Jets do start the games off early, that their offense can kind of get into the groove of things. And I also expect on the defensive end, the Jets to really throttle Oakland and get to Derek Carr, but also shut down that running game of the Oakland Raiders, which until this point in the season has really not been impressive at all. So I think the Jets, I have them winning this game. Now, I would not be surprised if the Oakland Raiders put up a fight. They really have nothing to lose, and that's always an interesting little tidbit to any team's performance against a team like the New York Jets, who are by far the favorite. So maybe Oakland pulls out an underdog stretch, and maybe they give a little bit of a contest as the game continues. But I would be very surprised, I'll put it that way, if the New York Jets don't win.
These are two teams that have impressed me early on this year. I didn't know what to expect from the Jets team, and I certainly didn't know what to expect from the Raiders, as bad as they've been in the past several years. But the Raiders are 3-3, and I didn't expect them to be remotely at 500 at all. I didn't expect the Jets to be, you know, right behind the Patriots in this division. So I'm going to look at it today. This Raider team, this Jets team, both of them have surprised me. But I'm going to go Raiders today just because I want to see this Oakland team play a team that is near the top of the division and play them well. The Jets, I think, certainly have the better athletes. But I'm going to go with the Raiders because I'm going to go and say the Jets maybe make a couple of mental mistakes and the Raiders are going to come and pounce on those. So I'm going to go Raiders over the Jets today in one of the late games this afternoon.
Okay, Brian Benway is working really hard to really sever our friendship here as he's going against the Jets. He's having himself a good morning. We're having a good morning here on the Green and White Show now. With the Jets offense, the way it has been, look, I love the fact that they're able to consistently drive the ball down the field. Their mixture of run and pass on the offense, extremely potent now. That's what you need in football. You need to have that great blend. And the fact that Ryan Fitzpatrick may not be able to throw the ball 20-25 yards down the field still isn't hurting this team. Imagine if they did have a guy like that who could really get the football down the field, how Brandon Marshall would really be able to dominate one-on-one situations. Okay, but right now he's able to get the ball short, okay, extend the play, run after the catch. That's what he's good at. You're seeing Eric Decker kind of substitute for what a tight end would do. You're seeing him come across the middle more, and they're using Bilal Powell out of the backfield more, and they're really throwing that short pass in the flat to the back, and they're actually going to be using a lot more of the wide receiver screen. I'm seeing a lot of Chris Owusu in the game. I want to see a little bit more Jeremy Curley in the game. I'm glad to see him, you know, back on special teams where he belongs, you know, returning kicks. But I want to see a lot more Jeremy Curley in this game. I predict the Jets win, but I also want to see the Jets offense maintain that flow that they have had, you know, during the these first six games. Other than the Eagles game, where they looked terrible basically on offense. They've looked very good on offense every other game. They look like they can maintain and control a lead if they have it. You know, last week aside against the Patriots, they've been able to dominate on offense as far as I'm concerned. So I think they can play with anybody, Amiri. I want to know if you agree with me or not.
I
sound like you're not going to agree with me.
I don't know.
You hear all that? You sound like Chris. Who did you dress up as?
Okay,
that's my dissatisfaction. I think that's a no. I think that's a no.
Yeah,
my dissatisfactory voice, I guess.
Just had to go there. Great time so far. Brian Benway there, Mary Tillich there, Joseph Oz here. Green and White shows. We wrap up the show really quickly. Let's get your opinion real quick, because I brought it up with Amiri early. JPP, Brian, back with the Giants, injury and all. What are your thoughts? Do you think he's going to be able to impact the Giants roster if and when he ever gets on the football field?
Well, when you look at that injury, that's pretty gross, too, by the way. When you look at all those pictures, that is, if you have children, don't let them look at the injury photos, because those are pretty nasty. You have to be, I don't know, I'm looking at this, and I'm not really sure what I feel yet about it, because when he was healthy, we saw how great he was. I mean, he was dominant, and he was a huge part of them, you know, with those Super Bowls. I don't know if he has it anymore. He's got to be healthy, first of all. Second of all, I'm actually kind of impressed with the Giants, even though they're in a bad division. So, you know, you look at the Cowboys and the Eagles and the Redskins, that division is terrible. We know that, but the Giants are beating the teams they're supposed to beat, and they have to beat. So you look at that. But I look at him coming back to the Giants. I'm not sure how big of an impact he's going to make. I would like to see it, because I would like to see guys that come back and overcome adversity. That's a great part of sports. We've seen it in every sport at every level. There's guys that come back from injury. I would like to see him come back and be a success, and we all know he can help this Giants team. They need every bit of help that they can get, because sometimes we don't think, well, what are we going to see from the Giants today as an inconsistent football team? But I don't know if he can have a huge impact like he did, you know, a couple of years back. But that's why we love to watch sports. We love to see guys, to see if they can come back and help teams and come back from the dead and come back from injuries. So I'm interested to see it. Well, I think it'll be a big impact. No, but that's why they play the game.
I hear you there. You know, great commentary on JVP. You're right. I'd love to see him back. Here's a player that we won't see back, or maybe we'll see back again on another roster. We all know about the Australian rugby star Jared Hine and his quest to become an NFL football player, signed by the 49ers out of camp. He was cut this week, so that experiment bringing the all-star rugby player into the NFL fell short. And we all saw him muff that punt at the end of the game there, which cost the 49ers a football game and probably cost him his short NFL career. Another career that hopefully this is it. I don't want to see him race anymore. I don't want anything to happen to this horse. I just want him to go to stud and just make millions and millions of dollars getting fat. American Pharoah, okay, Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup winner. Let's just retire this horse. Let's get a statue of this horse. Let's put him right up there at Secretariat and make him one of the 50 greatest athletes of all time, et cetera. A horse, of course, guys. What do you think? Best horse ever, American Pharoah, Amiri, Brian, what do you think?
I'll be real. I'm not too big into horse racing, so I'm not sure. But in my lifetime, my 15 years on this planet, I would have to say.
I love it.
We're going back 15 years. I like that. That's funny.
I love it. I love the way you said it. My 15 years on this planet. I'm like, all right, I got to count them.
Yeah.
You've had some good horse racing. You missed a couple good ones, but you've had some good ones in your day.
Definitely.
Brian, what do you think?
What I want to know is, how can you apply for the job that American Pharoah is going to do now? Just go out and stud all day long. I mean, how does one – that's the best job in the world, right? He's going to get paid to procreate now. I mean, it's
Brian,
awesome.
I've got
it's
a,
he's,
for you. you've got to if you can carry a little man for a couple of loops around around a racetrack three or four times, win three or four of the biggest races ever, then yes, they're going to put you out to stud too. So go ahead.
I mean, is that not the best job ever, though? Really? Is that not the best job ever? You get paid to procreate now for as many years as you can do it. Go get you some, American Farrell.
I guess the closest person, I guess, alive who can actually give us that is Mr. Ron Jeremy. And on that note, Brian Benway joining us on the program. Remember, folks, you can follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. That is with a Y, not with an I. Always a pleasure. Thanks, my man. Come on back next week and kick it with us again.
Yeah, we have to apologize real quick to London because they get to watch Chiefs and Lions. So we are sorry, Great Queen, that you have to watch that game today.
So we will all be singing God Save the Queen when that one kicks off. Brian, always a pleasure, my man. Catch you next week.
See you guys.
Thanks, Brian.
Oh man, never. he's never, you can never miss out with him. You know, there's always going to be one or two flying around. There's Amiri Tulik there. I'm Joseph Haas here. This has been the Green and White Show. Amiri, as always, another great show. God bless. Go Jets. We're going to turn it up, and we're going to take it home. How's that sound?
Southern Music Group. Alex H.
Unbelievable, that guy. He never let
the Bomb Factory.
Hilarious.
Oh, man. Can we
ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the East, live and live in color. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women and more women. More than I'm a disagreeable first. Black, young, and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, new, most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares? I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shifts back to order to liberal manslaughter in the first degree. Young, fresh. Don't sit a day, y'all fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds to blow. Dream chase for my life to you. Success. Young, fresh. Don't sit a day, y'all fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds to blow. Dream chase for my life to you. Success. Watch your money when I make it. Whatever's not given, I'ma take it. Cutties, let's take it. This business is cutthroat. Box cutter, so I don't get boxed under. Success brings jealousy and envy, so hopefully.